According to the old Frank Sinatra song, love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. But what about money and marriage? When it comes to your student loans, getting married can play a big role in how your loans get paid and the consequences of not making those payments on time. Lots of people worry about whether getting married means being burdened with their spouse's student loan debts. And those concerns are well-founded given the fact that according to some studies, as many as 22% of all divorces are caused at least in part by money issues. With that in mind, today I'm going to tell you everything you need to know about the impact your student loans have on your spouse and vice versa. I'm also going to run down some of the top news stories from the world of student loans, and at the end of our show, I'm going to be answering a listener question about refinancing federal student loans into a private loan. And it's all coming up on today's episode of the Student Loan Show. Stay with me. Welcome back to the Student Loan Show. I'm your host, Jay Fleischman, and today we're talking about how your student loans can impact your decision to get married and what to do about it. But first, let's run down some of the news-making headlines this week in the world of student loans. In Wisconsin, a bill has been introduced that would make Wisconsin the first state to allow student loans to be refinanced at lower interest rates. The bill would create the Wisconsin Student Loan Refinancing Authority to buy federal and private loans and refinance them at lower rates. Senator Dave Hansen, Democrat from Green Bay, and Representative Corey Mason, Democrat from Racine, are spearheading the effort, which has been co-sponsored by every single Democrat in the Assembly and Senate to get the bill passed. Now, the proposal would require that student loan borrowers be given detailed information before entering loan agreements, offer counseling to students and parents on college costs, and require the state to collect and publish information about private lenders. It would also require information about the state's student loan debt to be tracked and provided to lawmakers. Similar legislation failed to pass last year, but with coverage of student loan issues prevalent in this election cycle, perhaps something new will happen here, or at least be able to spur the conversation a little bit further. Moving on to the world of private lending and private repayment, a Boston-based startup is trying to help you get your student loans paid by your employer. The company Gradify, or Gradify, G-R-A-D-I-F-I, has created a program to alleviate student loan debt called the Student Loan Paydown Plan. Employers can offer the Student Loan Paydown Plan, or SLP, to employees as a fringe benefit, which Gradify says will help employers attract and retain better talent to their ranks. Gradify founder Tim DeMello said he developed the idea after seeing students at his alma mater, Babson College, where he also sits on the board of trustees, suffer the tremendous burden of student loan debt. So far, about 100 companies have signed up with Gradify to launch the new benefit to their employees in 2016, and according to DeMello, companies ranging from 150-person advertising agencies to 200,000-person consulting firms are on the list. The first company to offer the benefit is multinational professional services company PricewaterhouseCoopers to its thousands of employees and specifically to the 11,000 recent graduates it recruits yearly. Companies have an extra incentive to provide relevant benefits to its employees. According to the National Bureau of Affairs, estimates are that U.S. businesses lose $11 billion annually in employee turnover and retention. So offering the SLP as a fringe benefit may go a long way towards keeping people employed by the company. After all, who wouldn't want their student loans paid by their employer? Finally, This past Friday, Secretary of Education Arne Duncan announced he would be stepping down after nearly 7 years on the job. Duncan's signature success was race to the top a $4 billion reform agenda that increased federal control over education and pushed states to adopt the Common Core standards. He has also been a vocal supporter of charter schools, as well as tying teacher evaluations to test scores. Under Duncan's leadership, the Department of Education shut down a program in which private lenders made federally guaranteed student loans and provided more options for income-based repayment plans of federal loans. Duncan also simplified the process of applying for federal financial aid, or the FAFSA form. The Department of Education pushed for a college rating system, settling for helping students access a deep database on school cost and performance through the College Scorecard, which was recently released to the public, and adopted a gainful employment rule that requires career-focused for-profit schools to provide and demonstrate that their graduates receive the skills and the training that helps them land actual real-life jobs. Duncan leaves plenty of unfinished business in higher education for his successor, former New York Education Commissioner John B. King. Although student advocacy groups like the Debt Collective were able to get Duncan's ear, some complain that the Obama administration hasn't done enough to help student loan borrowers. Chances are excellent that King isn't going to be able to accomplish much with a lame duck president and an impending presidential election, but we'll see what he accomplishes. Also, it'll be interesting to see his talking points to be able to get a gauge on what the next administration may be dealing with in terms of private student loans and education policy in general. Jumping into today's main topic, this is something that hits me every single day. One person owes student loans, the other person doesn't, and they're going to get married. What kind of liability am I going to have for my spouse's student loan debts when we get married? Once we get legally married, do I become liable for his debts, her debts, their debts? So here are my top 10 things to know about student loans when you're considering getting married. Number one, when you get married, your spouse does not become legally liable for your student loan debts. Only the person who signs the promissory note is legally liable. So if your husband or wife signed for a student loan, doesn't matter if you're married or not, you're still not legally liable. However, co-signing on a partner's student loan will make you responsible for the debt if your partner doesn't make the payments. So once you sign on the dotted line, you become legally liable. In addition, refinancing your student loan debt under both names can also set you up to adopt full ownership of the loan. When I say full ownership, what I mean is both borrowers are jointly and severally liable. Both borrowers are 100% liable for the unpaid debt. So if that student loan goes into default, you're both 100% liable. Whoever doesn't pay, the other one's got to pick up the slack. Bear that in mind. Number three, you cannot consolidate your federal student loans with your spouse's under the Direct Consolidation Loans Program, which is administered by the U.S. Department of Education. The federal joint consolidation loan was offered from the late 90s to the mid-2000s, and it allowed married couples to consolidate their federal student loans. Thankfully, that problem is no longer on the table because that program has been abolished. Why was it a problem? Because there was no way to separate the federal joint consolidation loan after the loans were put together. So if the married couple split up, they would both remain 100% legally liable to repay the debt. If you have a federal joint consolidation loan, you and your spouse are 100% legally liable. Number four, if you get divorced, it doesn't matter what the divorce decree says with respect to responsibility for repayment of a student loan. Again, you are not legally liable unless you sign the promissory note. If two people sign the promissory note, then they're both legally liable, unless the lender has agreed to be bound by the terms of the divorce decree. It doesn't matter what that decree says. It may matter in terms of one former spouse bringing an action in state court for non-performance or for violation of the divorce decree, but that's a divorce issue. That's not a student loan issue. Number five, if you elect income-based repayment to bring your student loan payments down to a percentage of your income, then your spouse's income will also be considered in that calculation unless you file your federal income tax returns separately. Contrary to popular belief, there is no legal requirement that you file a joint return, though your tax liability is going to be affected. What you want to do is get your IBR numbers lined up, figure out how much your IBR payment's going to be under a joint filing or a separate filing, and then talk with your CPA about the difference in your tax liability. You'll be able to see which way you actually pay more money overall so that you can make a realistic and rational and competent decision for your best financial interests. Number six, if you and your spouse both have federal student loans, then your IBR payment is going to be calculated using joint income as well as total balance due. However, if you file separately, then again, your spouse's income is going to be counted only with respect to your spouse's student loans. It may make sense if you both have federal student loans to file jointly, even though your income is going to be higher, because it will allow you to calculate your IBR payment combined on your federal student loans, and that may end up saving you some money. Number seven, if you go into default on your federal student loan, the government can offset your tax refund to pay the amount due. If you file jointly, that means the full refund is going to be seized, though your spouse, assuming that they're not a borrower, they didn't sign on the student loan promissory note, they're not in default. The non-borrower spouse can file what's called an injured spouse claim. An injured spouse claim, which is different from an innocent spouse claim, can help the non-borrower spouse get back the part of the tax refund that is attributable to their income from the joint return. It applies where the IRS has intercepted the refund to offset the federal student loan debt that's owed by the student loan borrower spouse, but not by the other spouse. Number eight, if you are sued and the lender gets a judgment against you, your spouse still is not legally liable for repayment of the debt. However, if you live in a community property state, your spouse's income may be garnished in connection with execution of the judgment. In other words, the judgment creditor may be able to take a portion of your spouse's wages if your state allows for wage garnishment. The only way around this, if you live in a community property state, is if you've got an agreement in place designating your spouse's income as separate property. That's typically going to be a prenuptial agreement or an antinuptial agreement. You want to sit down and you want to talk with a family law attorney or somebody who does prenups or antinups, because there are strict requirements. Those requirements do vary state by state. There's going to be a link in the show notes to give you an indication of which states are community property and which states are not community property. And this only applies in community property states. If you don't live in a community property state and you're sued and the lender gets a judgment against you, your spouse's income cannot be garnished in connection with the execution of the judgment, period. However, number 9, a judgment creditor can freeze the assets in any joint account and can put a lien on any jointly held property. So if you and your spouse have a bank account together and you are sued for a student loan debt and a judgment is placed against you, then that joint account can be frozen based upon state law, if state law allows it, and money can be taken from it, again, based upon your state laws. You want to make sure that if one of you owes student loans and the other one doesn't, that you take a careful look at the assets that you hold jointly. I'm talking about cars, talking about houses, I'm talking about investment accounts, checking accounts, savings accounts, any of that. So you want to take a careful look at it. Number 10, all federal student loans contain a death discharge when the original borrower dies. In that case, a widowed spouse needs to know and needs to understand, thankfully, that the lender won't come after them or their estate seeking payments. So if you're married, your spouse has a student loan, a federal student loan, and your spouse dies, you are not going to be held responsible for that outstanding balance, and that outstanding balance is not going to be considered a debt of the estate. You are going to need to get in touch with the federal student loan servicer to provide information on the borrower's death. There are some forms that you're going to have to fill out. You're going to have to provide a copy of the death certificate, but don't ignore it. Speak with the servicer so that this way you can get things in line. Private student loans sometimes contain a death discharge clause, but it's very rare. For the most part, the unpaid student loan will become a debt of the estate, which has to be paid during the probate proceeding. So if your spouse has a private student loan and they die, that private student loan is a debt that is owed by your spouse and therefore is a debt of the estate. So any of your spouse's property may have to be sold to pay off that private student loan. Talk with an estate planning attorney. You're probably going to be able to get a lot of really good ideas about how to protect your estate if you owe the student loans or your spouse's estate if they owe the student loans. So again, talk with an estate planning attorney in your area. And now, here's your student loan question and answer session. I'm a dentist and a local bank is offering to refinance my $150,000 federal student loan debt at 2% interest. The loans I have now are at 6.8% and 7.8% split roughly down the middle. I've been making payments on those federal student loans on a 10-year repayment plan, but most of that money has just gone to interest. The balance has not gone down. If I refinance, will all the money that I've been paying just vanish into thin air? Also, I've got enough money now that I should be able to throw in about $10,000 every 3 months or so to help pay it down more rapidly. Any thoughts about the best options to repay off this loan? First of all, the money that you've already paid is already gone. Any refinance or consolidation that you do is just a new loan to pay off the outstanding balance of the old loans. So you don't get credit back. If you've paid money, it's already been paid. It's the first point that you need to know. Second of all, if you've got excellent credit, and it sounds like you do because somebody's offering to refinance $150,000 at 2% interest, assuming that you do have that excellent credit, then you're going to find that refinancing is a really good option. Better interest rate means lower payments due. Better credit means better interest rate. If you're going to throw $10,000 into the loan payments every 3 months, you're going to end up paying it all off far faster than under your current loan scheme. Private lenders such as SoFi factor in your job when calculating rates, and dentists score really well in terms of earnings capacity versus loan balance. What that means is shop around before you take any deal from any bank. You've got a lot of bargaining power here by virtue of what sounds like excellent credit, a really good job in a field that has a high earnings capacity in comparison to average student loan balance. So you may get a really good deal. That 2% may not even be the best one out there. So take a look around and grab the best one you can. Remember, however, that private student loans do not offer the same repayment and forbearance options as federal loans. So you may be better off paying down your existing loans rather than refinancing. If you ever become disabled or require an income-based repayment option or elect for public service so that you would otherwise qualify for public service loan forgiveness, those programs and those opportunities are not available for private student loans. That's something that you may want to think about. In addition, you've got $10,000 every 3 months to pay down those student loans. That's $40,000 a year. In 3 years, you will have paid $120,000. You may not actually be saving a lot of money by refinancing. It may be in your best interest to keep the loans as they are. My recommendation is run an amortization on those student loans with those extra payments factored in and get a sense of when those loans are going to be paid off, the 6.8, the 7.8 versus the 2%. How much time are you really saving, and is it worth the risk of the loss of those federal programs? Good luck to you. So that's all the time we've got today for this episode of the Student Loan Show. You can find show notes and links to resources mentioned in this episode at studentloanshow.com/030. There are more podcasts showing up every single day, and I know you've only got a limited amount of time to listen. I'm truly grateful that you've chosen to spend that time with me, and I want to do whatever I can to make this show as valuable for you as possible. If you've got a student loan question, head over to the website at studentloanshow.com, click the button for Ask a Question, type in your question, and it'll come right to me so that I can answer it on an upcoming episode. Please consider taking a minute to leave an honest review and rating for the show in iTunes. Lastly, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to get automatic updates every time a new episode goes live. This is Jay Fleischman for the Student Loan Show, and until next time, look both ways before crossing the street. See you next time.